The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We began on our last program an introduction into the organisms that we find in the phylum Annelida and talked at some length about the polychaetes, the marine organisms. We noted that the polychaetes make up really more than two-thirds of the 15,000 species of Annelida, and I think we'll not pursue that group any longer since they are of no particular importance to humans. And the second class are the oligochaetes. The poly and oligo, as we noted, are simply references to the presence of little bristle-like ceti that occur in the bodies of the annelids of the first two classes. The polychaetes, the marine organisms, having dozens of ceti present in each segment, and oligochaetes having few. The common earthworms will have eight pairs of ceti, and we'll talk about those in a little bit. There are some that may have multiple ceti, but usually the name, of course, conveys the notion that there are fewer in the oligochaetes than there would be the polychaetes. Probably in excess of 3,000 species of earthworms. They are pretty much cosmopolitan in the sense that they are found anywhere fertile soil is found. They don't do well in sandy soil. There must be detritus, plant residue, plant remains, rotten plants. They are not unduly fussy, but there's got to be something organic there to provide food. There are a few of these that will live in fresh water. One of them in particular we'll talk about a little bit. The chitinous bristles, the ceti in earthworms, pretty much are there to help them, to aid them in their movement through the soil. Again, if I'll leave a comment, I think, for a little bit about that. We will talk about them shortly. In length, the ones that we work with in lab, usually from 6 to 15 inches. There are some tropical ones, however, that will get up to be 4 meters. 4 meters would translate into 12 feet, more than 10 feet long. These things are going to have 150 to 250 more segments there. We mentioned early in our discussion that the primary characteristic, the most obvious characteristic of annelids, would be the presence of somites or metamers, the ring structures that are there. The annelids would be the rings that separate each of the two, each of the somites from one another. And these are found in all of the annelids. We mentioned that the polychaetes have a head. Neither the worms nor the leeches have heads as such. There is a fleshy protuberance that's known as the prostomium that is found in the anterior portion of the earthworm body. This is aids in loosening the soil, investigating what's in front of the earthworm, etc. Aristotle referred to earthworms as the intestines of the soil. Darwin did published a work on earthworms. Earthworms literally eat their way through the soil, and workers have estimated they may eat as much as 10 to 18 tons of dry earth per acre, and they simply chew their way, or not chew, they don't have teeth, but they eat their way through the soil. And of course, as they do that, then they will extract from the organic material in the soil, the material which they need to sustain themselves. And they also are going to be making available phosphorus and potassium from the subsoil. And they're also going to be adding to the soil nitrogenous materials from their own body, which are simply the products of the feeding that they are doing. And so it's a two-way street. The earthworms will be absorbing materials for their own nutrition out of the soil, but they will be leaving behind both metallic ions and nitrogenous material that will make the soil fertile for plants. Wherever you find excessive numbers of plants, you're also going to find lots of earthworms. Now, I think it may be a little difficult to establish a cause and effect relationship, whether the earthworms are there because of the soil or whether the soil is there because of the earthworms is a moot question, perhaps. But they are found there. Wherever you find one, you're going to find the other. And if you do not have sufficient amounts of rotting plant material in the soil, then you're likely not going to have a lot of worms there either. And wherever the plant roots are, those roots are going to be absorbing material from the soil. It's also interesting to note, and important to note in passing, that the earthworms are going to aerate the soil as they move through it, which also provides the oxygen that the plant roots need for their work as well. The prostomium is a very motile structure. It doesn't appear this way in a preserved earthworm, but in fact it is, and it loosens and loosens the soil, allows the worm to move through it. I think probably the best term to describe earthworms is scavengers. Whatever they find as they eat their way through the soil, whether it's plant or animal, decayed organic material, bits of leaves, vegetation, refuse, animal matter, all of these are simply taken into the intestinal tract of the earthworm, and those things that are suitable are digested, providing the actual energy sources for the earthworm. The primary chemical in earthworms is glucose, just as it is in our bodies, and we will note a rather interesting structure in a moment that is in many respects somewhat similar to our liver. It certainly doesn't have the complexity of our liver, but it does have the ability to store glycogen, taking glucose molecules and hooking them together into a single molecule. The earthworms are going to be removing calcium from the soil, calcium ions, as they feed their way through it. And therefore, as a consequence of that, you're going to find rather high calcium levels in the blood of the worms, and there's also an organ there that has the capability of removing calcium from the earthworm's body, and that then would be returned to the soil. So the earthworms provide an absolutely critical functions, not one, but several, that allow, provide food for itself, but it also aids immensely in the plant metabolism that is occurring in the soil. The interesting structure that I mentioned, unique as far as I'm aware, is a structure that is known as a typhlosole. Now, the typhlosole is simply a fold that hangs down inside the lumen of the intestine of the earthworm. Among other things, it provides extra area, surface area for absorption, but it also includes the nutritive characteristics that we have talked about. It is absorptive, and it is also a digestive part. It has digestive functions, which are being carried on in the intestinal tract of the earthworm as the earthworm makes its way through the soil. The dorsal vessel of the intestinal tract surrounding that is a material that is known as chlorogogon This contains some cells, these cells that are actually involved in the translation of glucose molecules into a glycogen, into glycogen. Glycogen, of course, is the form in which sugar, glucose, is stored in many animal bodies, including humans, and interestingly enough, is found also in the earthworm. Now, you can imagine what the evolutionists are going to do with this. They will argue for some similarity between, on the basis of homology. Well, if earthworms handle glucose this way and humans do, then there must be a common ancestor of some kind. And as we spent some programs on some time ago, similarity is not necessarily an evidence for relationship. Real homology occurs in organisms that have a reproductive connection with one another. My comment at the time was that it is a notorious fact that children resemble their parents. They do that for a reason. There is a genetic community between parent and offspring. The evolutionary interpretation of homology, on the other hand, wherever there is anything similar, they see in that similarity an evidence of relationship. And as we observed at the time, there are many, many instances where there is no possibility of a reproductive linkage, and therefore similarities do not necessarily provide any evidence for a reproductive relationship. The earthworms have a fairly complicated circulatory system. Five pairs of aortic arches, a dorsal vessel, a ventral vessel. There is a fairly complicated excretory system in the earthworms, so that they have a number of things that would require some extensive explanation on the part of the evolutionists if they're going to get them from ancestors that didn't have those structures. And we've talked about that need for creative genetic material often. It's interesting that earthworms do not have eyes. They do have some capability of sensitivity to light, but no eyes as such. And all of these things simply compounded mean that on the one hand, there really is no good ancestor for these things. The evolutionists are going to try and come up with a common ancestor between annelids and arthropods and mollusks, and we've talked a little bit previously about not only the difficulty, but in my mind, the impossibility of trying to make a very good case for common ancestors between these varied organisms.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.